everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sal and Bob Show. This is the post-Super Bowl show. Across from me is my pal and show partner, Sal D'Amelio. How are you, Sally?
I'm doing good. If I hit a square last night, I'm taking you to Hyde Park or somewhere, Adiamos. But if I didn't hit my square or my bet, then I'm getting McDonald's.
There have been times I couldn't afford McDonald's after, you know, playing so many squares. So you got a few bets out there is what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. But obviously, you know.
We don't know what's going to happen.
But it's going to be a great – hey, it's the Super Bowl, it's always fun. Just eat buffalo wings and watch football, see great commercials.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun as we're recording this pre-Super Bowl. But I'm excited about it, man.
I'm excited. We have a great interview coming up for you. The one and only Tyrone Wheatley.
Tyrone Wheatley, University of Michigan. I had him on my fantasy team when he was with the Raiders, which I forgot to tell him that. But you're going to hear a great interview.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. What a great guy.
Oh, fantastic. Man, I was telling you, we watched his running backs video. He did like a mic'd up for, I don't know if it was the NFL Network.
Yeah.
And he's just coaching these running backs going through all the drills and stuff. And I'm like, I want to play for this guy. I want to play football for this guy.
I wanted to suit up. It's been 40 years and I wanted to suit up.
Yeah. I mean, just so like into it and engaging. What a great football coach, man.
Yeah. Great coach. He's been a success at every level. And I don't doubt that he will bring Morgan State to a championship.
Yeah.
And we're talking Super Bowl. We're talking football. We're talking all kinds of stuff today. We want to tell you about a place. This is the second time we're featuring Jess and Jim's.
Yeah, because we did San Francisco Steakhouse last week. This week is Kansas City for the two Super Bowl teams. And we did Jess and Jim's before.
Yes, we were actually at Jess and Jim's and had the unique experience of dining in their dining room. And today we're just talking about them a little bit. This is a great steakhouse. One of these kinds of places that it's all about the food, man. Great atmosphere, but they don't care about million-dollar chandeliers like some of the places we visited across the country in Dallas and whatnot. It's all about the food, the absolute best cuts of meat, and man, they know how to make a stiff drink too, don't they?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal place. And if you don't remember, or you didn't listen to the other episode in 1972, Calvin Trillin wrote an article in Playboy magazine that brought Jess and Jim's Steakhouse national fame. And Jim's health started to fail in 77, and the Suns have owned it since then. And they've owned it since 1990, so it's in a fourth generation. And it's just a fantastic place, man. So if you're in Kansas City and you're maybe you're celebrating the Super Bowl right now with the Kansas City Chiefs, go to Jess and Jim's and enjoy that victory. And if you're the San Francisco 49ers one, then you're going to go to Epic Steakhouse in San Francisco.
Right.
Steak. But either way, we just want to thank both of our steakhouses in Kansas City and San Francisco.
Our sponsors, thank you.
For being on the Sal and Bob Show.
Let's,
it's going to be a fun game, man. What prop bets are you betting?
Well, you know what? Because we're gamblers, we're inveterate gamblers, we can't stop. You can bet just the game, the outcome of the game, but that's only one of like 1,000 things you can bet, right? So Sal and I are into the prop bets, you know, all the different kinds of things like, okay, what's going to happen during the halftime show, all right? It's like...
I know what's going to happen. There's going to be 16-year-old kids getting napkins because Shakira and...
Yeah.
Holy cow. What if Shakira and
J-Lo?
J-Lo is going to be doing it.
They're going to be getting napkins.
I mean, come on. You know,
socks.
This isn't the Rolling Stones on stage.
I know.
This is two hot women.
Oh, yeah. You got teenage boys all over the country going to be closing their bedroom doors. I'll be down after halftime.
The football squares away. You don't like anything on them. Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know if we can bet on that kind of action in the halftime, but, you can actually bet on things like the color of J-Lo's shirt. Or if she'll be wearing a hat. Did you know that?
It's in Miami, so I don't think she's going to be wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be, right? It's going to be
hot. She's not going to be wearing much. J-Lo never wears much.
No.
I don't know. I mean, there's some.
She's
weird
probably going
to
change outfits during the whole thing because it. You know what I mean? They run off stage and change.
Yeah.
So I think she'll eventually have red on. I bet that.
Okay.
She only has to have it on for a couple minutes,
Let's get to the sports book, and we'll bet that. There you go. Here's another one. It's a weird one. What's the price of Bitcoin at the time of kickoff?
I don't even know what the price of it is 2 months ago. Yeah, I don't follow Bitcoin.
I don't either. But they got some fun ones here. And one of my favorites, Sal, is the national anthem props.
Yeah, we got that one right last year.
We did. We took the over.
What's her name saying it? I can't remember, but she...
Was it Pink?
No, it wasn't Pink.
Christina Aguilera?
Maybe
Who was it?
Christina Aguilera. I thought it was... anyway.
Whoever it was, we bet on it to go the over.
We went over, and she went way over. It was she, and she went way over.
Yeah, she wanted to show the youngsters, hey, I still got pipes.
Yeah.
This is how you sing this thing. We're going to have to look that up because it's been a year now.
Well, Demi Lovato's doing it this year, and I saw she did the national anthem of a World Series game a few years back, and it was 228. Her time on that was 228, so the over-under is 224. So she's actually saying 4 seconds. This is good research here. This is good research information here for you out there trying.
We're all about providing information on this Helen Bob.
But now
show.
Is she going to say, "Oh well, you know, I don't want to do it as long. I'm going to do a quicker version." You don't know what the artist is thinking about how they want to do it. But I always say singers want airtime, and you know, with a Super Bowl commercial costing $5 million for 30 seconds and an artist can be on television for 224. I if they asked me to sing the national anthem, it would take 9.5 minutes for me to,
I would forget the lyrics and have to restart.
I would do my comedy act in between verses.
Right.
Just to get airtime.
Yeah. Well, by the way, last year was Gladys Knight.
That's Gladys Knight. That's
we. And she killed it.
Yeah, yeah.
She did bet that she'd go the over.
She even did two Braves.
Yes.
Remember?
Yep.
She did two Braves. Home of the Brave and the home of the Brave. Like, she did two Braves.
Yeah. And her whole MO was to show all of these other young, you know, 20-something singers, hey, girls, Gladys Knight still got the chops. Yeah. Take a listen, watch, and learn. So Demi Lovato, she's the singer this year. I'm going to say we're betting the over on this, right? The 228. We're going to take now. She has a great story. She's recovering from drug addiction, and Sal and Bob, we applaud anybody who's taken charge of their life and who's had that problem and is grappling with it, because we've each had our own issues.
I think for some reason, I think she's going to go under that 224. I think that she's going to rush it. She's going to rush it a little bit and get through the song for the reasons that you just said. Maybe she's just going to come on. I mean, she's still going to sing it and sing the whole song.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say she comes in under 224. She's going to do it at like 221, 222.
And I'm going to take the over because I'm feeling that she has something to prove to the world that she's over this. You know, whatever the addiction problem was, and she wants to show that she's strong and with it. So I hope she has a great performance. This is, you know, my prediction was in no way trying to jinx
her. The color of the Gatorade, what do you think that's going to be? Is it going to be the normal?
You mean
green?
The Gatorade bath?
Yeah, over the coach. It's
if
it's Kansas City, I think it's going to be red because they're going to want to dump red on Andy Reid.
Oh, that's so a very, yeah, that, there you go.
And if it's in San Francisco,
would it be red again? There's no gold. I guess there's kind of a goldish Gatorade, right?
Yeah.
Orange.
Yeah. There's a – well, I don't want to see it be orange. People are going to think that Trump had something to do with that if it's orange. So I don't even want –
it's a Trump-arade bath. Can I say this, too?
He's going to be at the game.
Is he going to be at the game?
I'm pretty sure he goes to the Super Bowl. No, maybe not.
But he's a weird guy, man. You know, he doesn't show up to these things.
It's in Miami. It's near Mar-a-Lago. He's only got to take an Uber ride over to...
True, but you know how he is. He won't show up unless he knows he's going to be cheered.
Yeah.
He can't. He's not a guy that can handle the booze.
Yeah.
B-O-O-S, not B-O-O-Z-E.
Yeah.
He's a teetotaler. You know, Trump has never, drank alcohol.
No, I know.
I think dude needs a stiff scotch.
Amazing.
You know, just calm down.
The personality he has, and he's never been drunk and went to Taco Bell is amazing to me.
He needs to. Chill the f*** out.
But
can I just say something about the national anthem before we get off?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I never understand. I'm not one of these, you know, USA guys, although I love my country and I want to see us remain, you know, the leader of the free world. But we are the only country in the world whose national anthem has the words rockets and bombs in it. You know, the rockets, red glare, the bombs bursting. Why does anybody mess with us, Sal?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they don't. Normally, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while they do, but we're the greatest country on earth, and I'm glad to be living here. And, you know, I'm glad to be living here, but, man, listen to what's going on right now. We are in this. Mark these dates down because these are history-making dates. Here's what's going on in the world right now. You've got the impeachment trial going on,
yeah,
literally as we speak. I think today is the day they might be acquitting him. But here's what's going on. It's like everything wants to be done on time because Trump wants to give a speech, or Trump's getting interviewed by Sean Hannity during the Super Bowl, okay? So they wanted that to be an interview where he was already acquitted, but that's not going to happen. And then on Monday is the Iowa caucuses, which is like a huge deal.
Yeah.
Then on Tuesday is the State of the Union, State of the Country speech, whatever you want to call it. I mean, and they want him to give, they want Trump to give the speech as an acquitted president. I mean, and it's not going to happen. Now they're saying they're not going to do the thing till Wednesday. I mean, it's unbelievable what is happening in a 3-day period with the Super Bowl involved. It's just an amazing
little
3-4 days of history of the country that these dates will be in history books when we're
long that's
gone.
A good point, I mean, Sal. There's a lot going on. Busy news day.
God.
And the Trump and the White House want him to give the State of the Union as an acquitted president, but the Democrats are going to drag this out
as
long as possible.
Drag it out like Demi Lovato on her national anthem.
I told you I'm betting the over, and I'll bet the over on the acquittal.
Man, the acquittal. Yes, it'll go. But it's interesting times, and in the middle of all that is a football game that a lot of people care about, and then there's going to be great commercials, and then, you know, you don't want to go to the game and get a coronavirus. I mean, you got that. Now you got to think about that, too. You don't want to get a disease. I mean, what? And God, I'm just
speaking
stay
of disease. Yeah, we got this thing going around the world, emanating from China.
It's not nothing to joke about, but it's something that could spread.
Well,
to
it is. It's gaining steam, and just as comedians, can we just say this? I have seen more bad coronavirus jokes than I have seen about any other.
I mean, come on. If you use baseball analogies, it's a 50-mile-an-hour slow curveball being thrown at you.
If you can't hit that, you got no business being in the game. But you know what the people are doing? People are they're getting up there and they're whiffing on these these 50-mile-an-hour. Oh, it's so many bad. Oh, you know how you cure the coronavirus? Put a lime up your ass. Really? That's no.
That's it's too stupid. It's too
it is.
Easy.
It's too stupid.
You know, I mean, I saw one the other day. Corona is all upset about the name of the virus, so they're going to change the name of the beer to Ebola.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That was an open micer in Ann Arbor. and then they made a meme about it. And then all his friends with the sock hats and flannel shirts push that out on it. We're not saying that you can't joke about something like that. We can joke about anything. I mean, it was only a week after 9/11 when Gilbert Gottfried did that Aristocrats joke that was so achingly funny. It's not about timing. It's about, is it funny? Is it relevant? And none of this stuff is funny.
I agree. I think sometimes it is about timing, though, and it is about the way you say the joke, too. I really do believe that. I mean, now this week, unfortunately, I've seen some bad Kobe Bryant jokes. It's ridiculous.
There's a lot of those.
It's ridiculous, okay? And one guy on Facebook tried to compare it to the assassin that Lenny Bruce was doing assassination jokes after Kennedy. It's not the same, although an assassination is a horrible, horrible thing. But the president of the United States is in line to get assassinated. It could happen.
Yeah.
Okay? It could happen. And presidents have been shot at. And as horrible as that is, if a top-notch comedian wants to do a joke about it, it's actually, it's kind of accepted sometimes in society. But when a basketball player dies in a helicopter crash with eight other souls, God rest their souls.
And his young
and
daughter.
And a half hour later, you're doing something on Twitter. I don't know. I think
Ari Shaffir.
I think you're just
on.
An idiot. I'm sorry. I know he's a better
that was
comedian
terrible.
Than me, maybe.
No, he's not.
And maybe he's more paid better. I just think it's stupid.
He's
I,
a funny I, comedian. It's, he's actually a very so, good writer, and I like his stuff, but I agree with you. That was so dumb and nonsensical to come
funny.
Out with
it's
that.
It's not funny. Now, you know, 3 weeks later, you're in a comedy club and you've got a brilliantly written Kobe Bryant joke. Well, then knock yourself out and do it. I don't want to do that kind of humor. I'd rather try to make
I don't want to do it either.
And just other things. I don't like that road. I don't go down that road. And don't call it PC. It's not PC. It has nothing to do with PC. Okay.
Yeah. It's just about, does it hit you as a human being in the wrong way?
Correct.
Right?
It's just like you said, the 9/11 joke that Gilbert Gottfried read. Everybody was feeling sorrow, obviously.
Yeah.
But we needed a laugh after a week or two of that. And he brought that to us. And I think Jeff Ross did a couple of jokes.
Yeah.
You know, about it, but not about it. I think what his joke was, I was watching a show. It was literally like 2 weeks after 9/11. And the joke was, I forgot the context of the whole situation, but he was talking about somebody's dating life. And
yes.
He said to the guy, you haven't been laid since 9/11, okay? Which 9/11 was 2 weeks ago. But then he said 1985.
Yeah.
And it was a very well-written joke because it was clever in that 9/11 just happened.
Yeah.
But then he threw in the 1985 because the guy hasn't had a date since 1985. That's,
there's the funny.
That's a 9/11 joke, but it's funny.
Yeah.
He's not making fun of a guy falling out of a building.
And it's clever,
okay?
And it took time to write.
Yes,
and it's
that's
not
the difference,
comparing
Ari.
It
that's
to, you know, we're gonna, it's the coronavirus now. Corona wants to name it the Bud Light virus. Oh, stop.
Yeah, that's exactly, it's too easy. So that's what we wanted to talk about. Just in, again, very unfortunate incident to Kobe Bryant and the eight other lives lost. It's just a horrible, horrible tragedy. And I just can't joke about it.
No, and by the way, whoever that was on your Facebook saying that Lenny Bruce joked about John F. Kennedy being assassinated
that
right?
night.
That never happened. It never happened. That's a lie.
Yeah,
that's a lie. It was just nonsense that his guy was talking
unbelievable.
About.
Unbelievable. Okay. And a lighter thing, we're going to wrap this up and get to our interview with Tyrone Wheatley. But every week we try to talk a little bit about our comedy lives and kind of what happens. Like last week, I talked about having a bright spotlight on you and
how it
can affect with that. Another thing I want to talk about is we, as comedians, we finish up our sets, and then if we're selling our T-shirts or CDs, we're off to the side, and the crowd kind of walks out. And some people just go by and say, nice show, and they don't stop, and they don't buy anything. And some people want to stop and get a picture with you or buy your CD or buy your T-shirt.
You want to have a little fun.
And then when the dust settles and the waitresses and the servers are kind of cleaning up the tables, there's always like three or four or two lingering people that you just connect with, and they just start talking to you. And that happened with me last night at my show down at the Mohican Castle. Thank you to Comedians Nationwide, very, very good, reputable company that booked me on that. And it was a great gig. And I ended up meeting a couple, and I hope they're listening. They said they were going to listen. I told them that I would talk about them. Good friends that I met, good friends. Good. I think we're going to be friends. They're going to come back and see me again. But Jeannie and Brian are a married couple. They had marriages before they met.
This is a great
story.
She has
four daughters. I hope I'm getting it right. I'm pretty close. She has four daughters from a previous marriage. He has three daughters from a previous marriage. Now they live together with seven daughters. I told this Brian guy, I said, dude, I don't know how you do it with seven women in one house. God bless. Eight women. I'm sorry. Your wife.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy cow. And then they've got some correlations where one of his daughters' name is Madison. One of her daughters is named Madison. Her name is Jeannie. One of his daughters' name is Jeannie. And then there's something else where there's a middle name involved with it. So there's a lot of correlation with their names and some birthdays, I think. And it's just crazy. But I talked to them in the parking lot just leaving last night for like a half hour, and just a great couple. And I just really enjoyed talking
to them. No wonder they wanted to talk to you so long. Who wants to go home to seven girls in the same house?
I think one of the girls, that's a good point. One of the girls, I think, was 22. So maybe she's babysitting them all. Because it's like their age. Because I said, what are their ages? And obviously they rattled them off. It was like 24, 21, 19, 17, 14, 13.
Wow, all the way.
I was writing them down going, okay, are these the Powerball numbers for tonight? I'm literally playing. Although
you're always
seven,
thinking, Sal.
There's seven, so I might have to. Maybe the seventh kid's going to be the extra Powerball number. Isn't there an extra number or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, there's
anyway,
a power
shout
number.
Out to some fans and some people that come to the show and you just meet and just a good connection with them. And hopefully you see them down the line at another show. But that's the beauty of our job.
Oh, yeah.
Is we
that's
get to
the
meet
part
people
we love.
Like that. And you just, you know, you know, we sometimes drive home and we don't know what the hell we just did on stage. I mean, we made people laugh, but people literally, it's a night out for them. We don't realize how big of a night they had.
Yeah. I mean, they don't get a lot of nights out with seven kids. So, you know, you made it count for them.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Maybe that's why we're in the parking lot. They have seven kids, but
they didn't want to go home.
Great story,
man. They're like, please,
man.
Sal, stay and drink with us. We'll take an Uber with you.
Well, we had a great show here tonight, today, and we want to leave some room here for this interview.
Yeah, you need
you got
to
anything,
do
you got
his
anything
intro.
Else, buddy?
No, I'm just looking forward to talking to Tyrone. This has been a lot of fun, and why don't you talk about his accomplishments as
yeah,
a
no problem.
Football
well, we
player?
Want, like I said, enjoy. Hope you guys all enjoyed the Super Bowl. This is going to air on Monday, February 3rd, I believe. And we are about to have a great interview with probably one of the greatest high school athletes to ever come out of Michigan, as he started his career in Inkster, Michigan, and went to Dearborn Heights Robichaud. He played football at the University of Michigan for Gary Moeller for 4 years. He went on to have a successful NFL career for 10 seasons with not only the New York Giants, but the Oakland Raiders. He went on to coach at many, many levels in high school football, up to college football, up to the NFL with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And now he is the head football coach at Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy this interview. It was absolutely fantastic. Here is our interview with Mr. Tyrone Wheatley. Welcome to the Sal and Bob Show, Tyrone Wheatley. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm awesome. Thank you for having me.
Now, before we had you on the line here, you told us that you were kind of talking to a recruit. So that's really cool. You said you're having a recruiting weekend. How is that? Is that now you've been doing that obviously as an assistant coach and stuff like that. I'm sure you've gotten involved with, but this is your first time as a head coach. Is it kind of nerve-wracking to go into somebody's house and talk their parents into getting their son to go play football for you or have them come into your office? What kind of experience is that?
Well, it's, I would tell you this, it's a spectrum, man, on either end of emotions, you know, gratification, joy. I mean, you go through a ball of emotions, and the parents who are in the child's life, who's going to be there for them and also advocate for them, but not be pushy and overbearing and act like they come in like they know everything. Those are the best parents to work for. But when you get the young man, mom who comes in and she's, you know, talking like her son is the greatest thing since sliced bread, I get it. I say, but you know, he doesn't piss honey. So, he's a kid who needs to be developed, and these are some of the things. And then, you have the dad who just knows everything. Those are the times where it can be really challenging. And does that apple fall far from the tree? And do you, you know, dissociate yourself from the kid because the parents are overbearing? And in my thing has been 9 times out of 10, that apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So a lot of it is you just look at the parents.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I've never been in your position, but I've got to believe that you get a reflection of the character of that player through the household where they're growing up. I got to believe that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, you do have your outliers where, you know, the kid is just And I've always laughed, and my coaches, we laugh about this all the time. Like, the kid doesn't say anything. I'll say, well, have you met his mom? She speaks for the both of them, right?
Yeah, right.
And a lot of times, and, you know, you have the outliers where the kid is just solely so far and different from the parents that you get those young men every once in a while. It's fun.
Absolutely, it's got to be fun. Absolutely, to talk to a kid. He's making a decision for the next 4 years of his life, and you know, you're coaching him along with that. I mean, even if he doesn't choose Morgan State, you're probably getting that kid for an hour or two, and maybe you're giving him some of Tyrone Wheatley's experience in college and the NFL. It's got to help, no matter if he chooses Morgan State or not. Correct.
Right, and that's what we always talk about. You know, people always say, you know, education is plan B, education is plan A. Because without it, you can't get into a university. Without it, you can't get on a football field. And I always just tell those guys, you know, listen, become a good human first, and which will make you a great football player. But being a great football player doesn't make you a good person. So, you know, and I just try, you know, like you say, depart my words of wisdom on them, and hopefully it sticks, and so on and so forth.
That's awesome, Tyrone. Hey, one of the things that if you when you are talking to these recruits, they got to be pretty impressed. As you obviously you have a great staff there at Morgan State, but you brought in a couple of Michigan players there, and Derek Alexander and Will Carr. And there's a great video online of you three talking about, you know, just how you guys know each other. You know how each other coaches, and I think it was Will Carr that said we had the same parents. Meaning the parents of the Michigan Football University program. I love that quote, man.
Well, I think in anything you guys do, and I mean, look at what you're doing right now. It's about chemistry. It's about, you know, like-mindedness and where are your goals and your visions. And we say our end game. What's your end game? You know, so we can sit down and we can have our talks. We can have our differences. But as long as our differences are trying to get to the end game, some people's difference is just totally off the concept of where you started.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of times most staffs don't stay together. Most anything doesn't stay together. But, you know, like Will may have an idea, Derek may have an idea, but it might be different from mine. And I'll say, hey, listen, so you understand what is our goal? What's the end game? Yes. Are you trying to get there? Yes, I am. So explain to me in a way that I can understand it, you know. And then we'll get there. Then when you're talking about how we were raised through Michigan football, is there's a standard. And the standard is the standard. There's no deviation. There's nothing from it. So when I look at those guys, they understand. Like, so when I go, and the coaches who've never coached with me, they say if when I go off the beaten path, Will and Coach, you know, Will and Derek understands it. So it's always great to have like-minded people with you that understand that you're, you know, where you come from and where you're trying to go.
Absolutely. It makes it a lot easier to coach. That's awesome. Me and Bob were just screwing around. We were having a little bit of lunch here before your interview, and we saw a video of you as a running backs coach over for Jacksonville Jaguars. And I swear, I was just telling Bob, I go, man, I want to play for this guy. I mean, you were like firing me up, and I've never been a running back, but you're like every guy's going through the drills, and you're just giving tips and you're yelling stuff out. You're not just, you know, you're not just standing there on your phone or just looking at them. You're like engaged with every moment of every minute of that practice. That's amazing.
I think right now, and I always go back, I want to have a personal relationship with each player. Each player is different. You have to have a personal relationship. So when you understand their why they're doing it and what they want after this, it's hard not to be engaged because I'm not just coaching a football player now. I'm coaching a individual that I truly, truly care for. And so every moment of the day, everybody is a little different. So I'm coaching Corey than I coach Leonard Fournette. I'm coaching TJ Yeldon than I coach Fournette. So you're not just yelling at everybody the same cues over and over. Each guy has his own idiosyncrasies. Each guy has his own, whatever it is it may be, he has it. So you have to be engaged. And then when that proverbial light bulb turns on and the guy gets it, and now all of a sudden he's developing, he's growing. Now when your verbal coaching turns into nonverbal coaching where you guys can kind of look at each other and look and just shake your head and say, yeah, you know you messed up. And he shakes his head back and say, yeah, I messed up. And he knows why. That is the most beautiful thing in the world. And it's hard not to be engaged. If you love this game and you love the people you're doing it with, it is, how can you not be engaged?
Well said, Tyrone. You know, one of the things is there's parallels to stand-up comedy and football, believe it or not. Like in stand-up, when I see a great stand-up or I work with a great stand-up that's just been doing it for years, I can ask that person questions of how it is at his level, his or her level. And that's got to be the same thing for you. I mean, you did it in the NFL. You did it at Michigan. So these kids have to be just looking up to you. And when you speak, it's like, hey, this guy did it. I'm not saying that there's not good coaches that didn't play. I'm sure there are. But when you lived it and felt it like you did, it's just got to be those kids have to be ears wide open, you know?
It does. But I've also seen where it kind of backfired on me because some young men, I wouldn't say always want the easy way out, but some just want to kind of go through the motions. And a lot of guys will say, Coach, well, I'm not, you know, this isn't in the NFL or this isn't big time football. Well, why are we doing this? And I tell them, I say, I'm doing this not because it's the NFL or big time football. I'm just doing this because it's going to make you the best player and the best person you could possibly be. Not because of Michigan, not because of the NFL. It's just because it is a high standard of the man that you want to become. You know, so it works both ways.
Speaking of Michigan, I want to get kind of your take a little bit on some stuff. You know, it's been a rough patch here for Michigan in the last probably 10 years, you know, we got Harbaugh now there. Just from an outside, I mean, you're an inside guy as you played at Michigan, but from the outside now because you're not on the coaching staff, what do you think is going on? I mean, we could talk about this for 3 hours, but I mean, in a nutshell and very quickly, what do you think is going on there? Do you think is it a coaching thing? Is it a recruiting thing? Maybe they're not getting as big a recruits as Ohio State. Why can't we beat that freaking team from Ohio?
you know what? That is a question that still is baffling. Now that I'm not, you know, behind the walls, really, our guys fight. They play hard.
They do.
I'm not going to say we're getting out coached. I just, you know, at some point in time, football is a game of, you know, one-on-one matchups. And at certain areas and certain positions, we don't have those matchups. But inside those walls, now, okay, when I was there inside those walls, I don't want to sound like a bitter coach, but we got screwed in Ohio State. Let's just put it plain and simple. It was not a first down. Okay?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And they know. And they know they walked out of that one. You know, I'm not there anymore, so the refs can't come back and find me or whatever to kick me. So when you look at when I was there, that we fought hard. We were in that game, and we had a chance to win it, but there's a couple of calls in that game in Columbus that, you know, just I was just say was, you know, the glasses or the contact lenses or whatever just wasn't working on that day with these refs.
Yeah.
So hey, I could sound bitter or whatever. If you could tell in the tone of my voice or whatever, I am. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm bitter. I'm ticked off. Yeah, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. I can't. It's when you work that hard and then a play is just because a ref made a bad call. I mean, look at Drew Brees the last 2 years. That poor guy's lost playoff games. I mean, you can say what you want on this just a month ago play, but last year against the Rams where the guy was tackled before the ball got there and they didn't call it. You know, so Drew Brees probably lost out on a Super Bowl. You know, you lost out on beating Ohio State and God knows what else would have came after that. So, yeah, that's got to be heartbreaking. I just couldn't even imagine going. I mean, I lost a high school football game because our snapper snapped it over the punter's head, and instead of the punter kicking it out of the end zone, he fell on it in a fetal position at the 1 yard line.
position.
You fell on it at the one. It's still their ball, so they punched it in at the one, and we lost to Stevenson High School. I still have that memory of that play in my head, and that was just a high school football game. I couldn't even imagine you having that play in your head against Ohio State.
The greatest rivalry of all time.
Yeah, so
It hurts. It still hurts. It still sucks. But at the end of the day, okay, now imagine this. What do you say to your players in the locker room after that game? Okay, right now, you're battling with self-efficacy and how you're going to deal with yourself and how you're going to make it all right within you. But how do you go in that locker room and look your players in the eye? What do you say to them? How do you get them to bounce back?
Yeah, that's a good point, because they're all looking to you to lift them up and you're feeling down.
Yeah. You know, the old, hey, man, great fight. We'll get them next year. You know, sometimes that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't work. So, you know, you have to come, as a coach, you have to come to grips and swallow it and put it away. You know, wait for a week later after the season to go punch the punching bag, whatever the case may be, but you have to suck it up and now turn your attention right to your players.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. Very well said.
Well, I wasn't, I didn't play a football past high school, Tyrone, so I don't have any, you know, knowledge of what it's like to play at that level and at that, you know, to play Ohio State and then to play in the NFL. That's a, you know, congratulations to you for a wonderful career. But I was a boxer when I was younger, and I remember losing the Golden Gloves by a split decision. And my, you know, my manager came over to me in the locker room and said, "You didn't jab him enough." And then he walked away. And that was it. There was no inspiration there whatsoever.
None. Yeah. You know, maybe he had all his hopes and dreams tied up into you, and I guess you just didn't jab him enough.
Well, if he tied all his hopes and dreams to me, he was a very unfortunate guy. No, he was a lovely man, very influential person in my life. I loved him dearly. John Doyle was his name. But, yeah, I was just trying to make light of that locker room thing. But, you know what, I have a question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. but we ask this of other either professional football players or coaches we've had on the show. Sal and I are in the Detroit area, so you know we're Detroit Lions fans. What is wrong with that team? I mean,
all right. Here's you know what? Oh my goodness!
You're looking down your list.
Why does everybody answer this question the same way with bewilderment? And
because we're huge Detroit. Listen, I go all the way back to Dexter Bussey. Another One Bites the Dust.
Yes, me too.
So Another One Bites the Dust. I grew up thinking that that song was written directly and only for the Detroit Lions. So we go to Mississippi. I'm taking a field trip. We go to Mississippi, and I hear Another One Bites the Dust. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why is the Lions theme song down here? Everybody's looking at me like, you idiot. What are you talking about? I said, no, no, the Detroit Lions song. So I grew up, Billy Sims, an idol of mine, right? Then you go, you name it. I love the Lions and will support them and grow with them. Okay. So, back to the question. I
divert. Back. No, that's a great, no, that's a great story, because I thought that song was theirs too. I didn't know Queen sang it or whoever did it, you know?
No, Tyrone, that is a perfect segue, because you, like us, you know, have to preface every answer with, well, I grew up loving the Lions, but. So, what's the but?
In all honesty, in anything in life, as a stand-up comic, as a rut, whatever, the Lions never, ever, ever, ever display or secure an identity of who they are.
Yes.
So when you say Detroit Lions, what do you think? Like, who are they? Are they a tough football team? So back in the day of the Norse division, right? So when you said that division, what comes to your mind?
Hard hitting, you know, in your face football, you know, run the ball first mentality.
Yeah, all of that,
right?
But does the Lions do we ever have that mentality? Right?
No.
Good, very good point.
We never established an identity. The second portion of it is you're in Detroit, right? You're in Detroit, hardworking blue collar people who work and go out in the harsh of winter, who has to shovel, you know, we all understand, man, you got to get up early, get your car running, get the scraper out, get, you know, dig yourself out, all those type of things. Why not display yourselves and take on the image of the city and who you represent?
I agree.
Because that's the people. And I think when the Lions hire these coaches, they're looking at schemes instead of developing an identity.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a better answer to that. That's absolutely perfect, Tyrone, because it's bothered me for, I'm 57 years old. So it's been 57 years of futility, and that's the best way I've ever heard it put. They have no identity. They have nothing to model themselves after or to shoot for. Every year, it's something different.
Yeah, yeah, and they just can't get that consistency going where they're growing as a team. Because let's face it, not every team becomes great right away. You've got to build up for it. Like the Pistons, yeah. You know, the Pistons did. They couldn't get past the Bulls. Then they got past the Bulls. You know.
Yeah.
Let's stop there. Let's segue to that one, though. How did the Pistons get that way? Bad Boys. Hockey Town became Hockey Town. Tolbert. Right? Now let's go to baseball. Let's go to our bad boy. Who was our bad boy at baseball at that point in time? Mr. Gibson.
Yeah, that's right.
The Tigers had a grit about them. Hey, man, don't throw that pitch to me low and inside, or else it's coming to the mind. Don't you stand in front of that base. Some of our teams, other than the Lions, had a grit about us. I can't remember what year it was, but what was the year we drafted like 7 receivers?
Well, we did that in the Millen era, so that was we started doing that about 10 years ago. It was ridiculous. Roy Williams, and then prior to that, it was Charles Rogers.
I didn't know we took 7 in one draft.
I don't remember that number, but yeah, your point makes sense.
I might
sense.
Be exaggerating the number, but the point remains is, you know, let's get a defensive line, offensive line, you know, just for me looking at it as a Lions fan, we just never had an identity.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've always said that. I've said this to Bob. I've never seen, no matter who the coach is for the Lions, I've never seen a press conference where they go freaking nuts. Like, I want to see, I want to see a Lions coach just go nuts in a press conference. You know, I just always see them just melancholy after a loss. And if they got blown out, it's the same press conference as if they got blown out or if they lost by a point. Or I never saw any emotion out of the coach in a press conference. I want to see him get, I want to see a Jim Mora moment and go, playoffs?
Yeah.
You know, I want to see a Lions coach go nuts like that, you know, but it never happens. I always watch the press conferences and I'm like, they're just going through the motions again. And I don't know. Like you said, I don't see the passion. I just don't see the identity. I think it's a perfect answer to that question. You couldn't be more right, Tyrone. It's great, great way to answer it. And hopefully, this is our decade. I think the Lions will be all right this decade. We're going to do something.
I hope so.
Yeah, and we want to wish you continued success in your career. Everything that, you know, I mean, we both followed you when you were a Wolverine and we followed your pro career. And, you know, and now that you're coaching college, we know what you're doing and we know that you're trying to improve the team and the lives of these young men on a daily basis. And so we want to wish you luck and the best in all of that.
Well, I truly appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I truly appreciate you having me on the show. I love it. Thank you very much.
Before we let you go, there's a big football game this is going to air on Monday. The game will be over with. But the Super Bowl is coming up this weekend. It's San Francisco versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And who do you think? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, like I said, you're either going to be right or wrong on Monday morning when this airs on iTunes or any other platform that you get your podcast on. As our interview with Tyrone Wheatley will be on there. But what is your prediction? And hopefully, you're right.
Okay, so this is how I typically make my predictions. I go with whoever, how many guys are on either team or who I'm the closest with on the team. So I don't like, that's how I make the prediction. But I'm going with Kansas City Chiefs for two reasons. for two reasons. A, Eric Bieniemy, great guy, love him to death. Took an official visit to the University of Colorado, my senior year of high school, and my host, who hosted me on my visit, was Eric Bieniemy.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
And great guy. The running back coach there with the Kansas City Chiefs, phenomenal story, incredible story. I think he was on 30 for 30. You should, if you can check it out, great guy. And then, of course, Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't have a score. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah. Well, hey, you can't. I said 2 years ago when I first saw Patrick Mahomes kind of play and kind of become the quarterback he is, I was watching the game with a buddy, maybe it was even you, Bob, and I just said, okay, that kid right there is going to win some Super Bowls, okay?
Yeah.
He's not going to go his career winning any Super Bowls. And now he's there, and I just don't see him losing it either. Although San Francisco is a very, 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 very good team. I think you're right. I think Kansas City is going to edge them out. What about you, Bob? What are you saying?
I'm going with Kansas City as well, but I don't think it's going to be close. I think Mahomes is going to get up on them this time because they've spent a couple of weeks, you know, coming from behind, and they're like, not in the Super Bowl, guys. Let's go out and jam it down their throats. And I think they're going to run away with it. I really do.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a 3-score win for KC.
Okay.
Wow, 3-score win. That's
Yeah, no, hey, that's a couple of weeks ago we did this, Tyrone, and I forgot, I think it was Tennessee versus New England, and I think Bob said Tennessee is going to beat New England.
I did say that.
You've been pretty good at this playoff. But, hey, Tyrone, thank you so much. For a guy that started his life in Detroit, Michigan, in Inkster, Michigan, and became a high school football star and a track and field star in high school at Robichaud, and then went on to Michigan and had a great career there, and then went on to the New York Giants and the Oakland Raiders, and now you're into coaching. Man, you have made football your life, and you have really, I think, done a lot of good things with your life coming, let's face it, from a community like Inkster, Michigan. That's tough to become a person like you have become. That's pure dedication on your part, man. So kudos to you, man. And if you're a high school football player out there, go play for Tyrone Wheatley at Morgan State University. You're gonna get some good life lessons, man. Thank you so much for being on the Sal and Bob Show.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.